This is High Plains Morning on member-supported High Plains Public Radio. We thank you all so much for staying tuned to your public radio station. It is January. We're having a great new year, right, everybody? We've been playing so much more new music on High Plains Morning, getting in the groove, and I am so excited. One of my absolute favorite artists has a brand new album out. Curtis McMurtry, he's a writer, composer, philosopher, singer, songwriter, a musician, all around Texas treasure out of Austin, Texas. You definitely have heard him on this program before. Hopefully, if you were, driving blizzards, you might have seen him live at the Starlight Canyon Bed and Breakfast a year ago last October. And man, this guy, he pulled it out. He had to tune his banjo in a blizzard, in a High Plains blizzard. That is commitment. So we're so excited to have Curtis on the line right now and tell us a little bit about what he's been working on. I found out there is a new album. It's called Toothless Messiah, releasing on the 5th of February, but available for pre-order. And I cannot wait to share this music with you, High Plains. This is really fabulous stuff. And we play his music all the time, so I know that you're going to really get excited about hearing this new stuff. So, Curtis, thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking about this album.
Thank you so much for having me, Jenny.
Well, I just want to say that looking at your Bandcamp site, seeing the write-up where you say you compose apocalyptic indie folk about the selfish and the cowardly, I'm just thinking, wow, you've really had no shortage of muses these past few years. So much has been going on that I can imagine you probably... You had a lot of selfish and cowardly things to write about. I can't fathom how much content you must have had to sift through.
Oh, so much. You're absolutely right. There's been no shortage of greedy and selfish characters everywhere in order to generate material.
Isn't it? And here we are on a folk music show where we celebrate humanity, community, but it's always got this darker side. And ultimately, now that we've got a new year, it's just something where, I don't know about you, but I've been just trying to be like, okay, and now is the time for me to try to find silver linings and start feeling better. But it doesn't seem wise. And the fact that your album is entitled Toothless Messiah, it's kind of like, I think that's really, it's right where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm less optimistic, admittedly. I would like to be more optimistic, but I can't. It really seems like we should all proceed with caution.
I totally agree with you. And you know what? Having a job as delightful as playing music for people, it's just rough. There's so much going on. This is an NPR station. We are constantly hearing the news. We are constantly checking in. And things have leaned toward horrifying for quite a while now. And I don't know. I feel like the catharsis of this most recent album, Toothless Messiah, being able to read the lyrics as poetry, being able to experience everything that, you know, the different characters that you have in these songs, which to me are very much waning left and right. It's been something where it just reads to me like kind of a esoteric novel where I'm floating through this space where everyone's experiencing these different faces of really just tyranny, authoritarian rule, loss of power, attempted, you know, holding on to power, questioning what that power is. This is all such big stuff. And you put it in such a beautiful package. And I'm just really, really so excited to share this music with everyone. Can you talk a little bit about the album as a whole, as like, you know, as its own different full package with these different vignettes in it?
Absolutely. So I really wanted to present a collection of songs that viewed the same figure or same situation from as many different angles as I could come up with, because it was stunning to me how we could project such different things onto our leaders, where some of my family would see a savior, where I and everyone I love would plainly see a monster. And it was frustrating, but also morbidly fascinating. And so I tried to filter as many different perspectives as I could think of. So I have some characters that are dogmatically excited about following someone they perceive to be a strong leader. I have some characters that are completely defeatist, that feel it's all over and there's no point in resisting. I have some characters that are excited to resist that think that it's worth it. And I think I have more characters than any that would prefer to just keep their heads down and do nothing, if possible, and hope the storm blows over.
And speaking of storm, that is really what ties the entire album together. There are a couple different tracks on here, namely the first one, the last one, and one in the middle where you can hear the storm. And
absolutely,
the fact that it's like wrapped up in this, to me, just kind of transported me. You know, you hear the storm at the very, very beginning of the album. The title track is entitled 127.17. I, of course, immediately start looking that up. And it's like, what happened then? What happened then? And it was the Muslim ban. It's something that really struck you as this is the beginning of something that really terrifies me.
Yes. And it's strange how tame or quaint that almost seems now in retrospect.
Yeah.
Horrible as it was, it with everything that came since, you can struggle to remember that. You can struggle to remember the protests in the airports, that it was just an immediate, it was just immediate proof that, no, look, everything we'd worried about during his campaign, he's following through on this immediately. It stuck with me, and that's really the only nod I wanted to give to the inspiration for the content was on that first track, was to say, I'm thinking about this, but I want it to apply to dictatorships and strongmen generally, and I don't want to mention his name because we've heard it enough. We might finally not have to hear it every single day now.
Yeah. And very clearly, we're talking about the outgoing administration head, just in case anybody's very confused right now. And this album this album deals very, very directly with, you know, an unfolding of not understanding and being completely alienated by what we're seeing coming from a U.S. democracy. And, you know, I love that in that storm, this first track is really just a spoken word track. I mean, it's just a poem. It's coming right at you, and it reads to me like an indictment. But the way that you have the vocal track kind of tweaked, it sounds almost like, you know, someone in that storm at a distance speaking into a bullhorn at like a protest that no one's at because it's raining or something. You know, you just have to wonder, is this a ham radio? Who's talking? What is this platform? And that made me just kind of feel, what is the platform right now? Everybody's hearing, and it's all these, you know, just randomly Facebook, social media, different things like that, where people are communicating their tiny little bullhorns, they have them.
Yep, literally screaming into the void.
You're making me feel so much better, Curtis, already.
I'm sorry.
No, do not apologize. This is you know, very, very intense stuff, and it's very large-minded things that are being tackled in this. But it's a small voice that you hear, but it's very angry. You know, it's very pleading for something. It's just falling short of a direct call for opposition with the line, "I pray we find the strength. Are you still resigned to the least resistance? I find I have lost hope, you know, but not the will to fight." So it's these suggestive, I like the suggestiveness of it without having those teeth, you know?
Yeah, that there's, I feel that narrator's given up, but still wants to do something.
Yeah, but not totally.
Which is a weird conflicting feeling to have, but
I think that's a lot to, that's a lot to really just like, I don't know, make me feel like, oh, this is something that I fully relate to. And a lot of the things that I see and feel, no one wants to have to face some of these big, scary things head on. Things as big as existential demise with climate change. Things as big as what do we do about not being able to have a conversation with our parents anymore, losing people to these things. These are all very, very big things. And the trauma of it just makes you deflated. You want to just drink and eat macaroni and cheese. But that's not helping.
It's not. Sometimes it can help you for a night.
Yeah.
Sometimes it, certainly the macaroni and cheese.
Yeah. Two or three nights, really, if you just really want to break it
all
up.
All for it. Yeah.
Well, this is the track that this album starts off with. And then, you know, it rolls into different tracks. Like you said, you've got a shifting perspective. That makes me think a lot about how you decided which ones would be in the succession. Could you talk a little bit about the placement of the messages of these songs and how they wheel through from what starts out as, you know, kind of this, you know, toothless being afraid, but not totally unresigned to doing something eventually. And then at the end, there is a light of hope.
I'm not entirely sure I'd call it hope, but certainly perseverance. So the album begins, it's divided into three chunks, the way I conceived it. So The first few characters are really wondering what to do at all. The second track, Food on the Table, is very much someone who feels that they shouldn't get involved and that it's silly for someone to expect them to get involved, that there's no point in risking yourself. The title track is a similar vibe entirely. Someone else who says, I'm not sure it's worth it for me to risk myself to help you or to do anything. And then after that, there's You Need Me to Betray You, which I saw as a frustrated progressive, really. Someone who really wants to be able to change things and is denied the power to do so thus far. And from there, we have the first split. You mentioned The Storm earlier. I use those tracks as dividers as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So Feeding on Parasites is that's someone who's advising when to jump, really. Someone who thinks it's over and it might be time to run. And from there, I tried to pivot into people that have more of an idea of what to do. The next track after that is The Cavalry Is Here, which is not a hopeful track at all. The line afterward is The Cavalry Is Here, but they have already surrendered. So someone else who thinks it's over and they're as resigned as they can be, but they have a sense of a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And following that is, I think, the person with the most direction. There's a character that I think is also the most blind, which is Praise Caesar. That one is just someone who's excited to show their strength however they can. And following that, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, going back to that first chunk before we move on, the Food on the Table title to me is something that really addresses the fragility of the power of the institutions of the status quo and how something very sinister can just very easily grab hold and just capsize these conditions of normalcy that everyone takes for granted. And we've really seen mm-hmm. a lot of things that we never thought we would see. And we're hearing unprecedented American history, all these things that have happened in the last month or so, especially. But it's been building and it's been swirling and everyone's distracted, overwhelmed, struggling, unable to secure basics like food and shelter. So how can you have a fight in you if you are struggling in that way? And I think that with the income inequality, we're seeing that. And to me, that is just laid the table that has no food on it for some of the things that, you know, are coming to us as, you know, chickens coming home to roost, to use a High Plains phrase.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then Toothless Messiah. I just love that. The line that jumped back. This was one of my favorites. Boy, you've jumped into the trap with both feet. And now if you fight, they'll know you're weak. There's so much of this mm-hmm. macho energy that we're seeing that to me bristles against some of the advances that younger people have seen, that this stuff does not serve you. And you've got a lot of information on these tracks in different songs in different ways where you talk about the older generations not really being something you can rely on anymore. And to me, this just kind of the title track here just kind of exposes that a little bit.
There is some definite generational resentment throughout the record. I think that is more than fair to say.
Yeah. And You Need Me to Betray You, going back to that one, this I felt was my favorite track. This was the one that really jumped out at me that I just kept wanting to listen to over and over. It just feels like an anthem for maybe snapping out of it, kind of like a very Greta Thunberg vibe there. I was getting a lot of like climate refugee and this existential threat that's
Certainly.
Just too much dread. And it just shuts you down. And how do you face and fight something so huge, especially as we, you know, watch these weak responses? So this to me felt like something you have to stare directly at it. You cannot fix it and you cannot be complacent with this one. And the line, my teachers taught me not to trust my teachers. Obviously, I mean, this goes back to like, you know, Socratic thought. So all these big things that have been kind of like we haven't seen in the foreground, to me, that's just like a distant call for that. And then the Feeding on Parasites, you said that is the shift. That's another one of those ones with the storm coming in, very a cappella mm-hmm. track. To me, that was just like an apocalypse TED talk. You know, it just shifted the perspective of the entire
Certainly.
Album at that point. You know, the war is on, self-sacrifice. And the line, is there any kind of power besides old names on old buildings, old friends in new uniforms, big fish in small oceans? You know, the old way failed. That center will not hold. Talk a little bit about why this was this shifting point for you in the album.
So I wanted to shift the perspective a little bit and not deal with one person, which so many of the other tracks, that is their focus. I was very much inspired in talking with my grandmother, my mom's mom, who immigrated to Peru from, I guess it's where she is from originally, is now Ukraine, was not Ukraine when she was a child. But she moved there to escape the political changes then. And they started over from nothing in one country. And then later in her life, she came here. And in talking with her about Trump and talking with her about the rise of fascism across the world, she was oddly optimistic, but in a very procedural way of, yeah, when we have to leave, we will. This is, we've done this before and we may have to again. And that is the story. That is how it moves. Mm-hmm. So I was using her as a point of reference, though she's nowhere near as dark as I am. Like I said, she was somewhat optimistic. So I was drawing on her experience for feeding on parasites and trying to give her somewhat of a voice on this record.
And, you know, having that history kind of looming in your family history as well, there is precedent for all this. It's constant. In fact, it's more common for this kind of thing to happen than it is for what this country has had to happen. So looking at all these things where, you know, one of the most popular, you know, genres is, you know, climate fiction and all these apocalyptic things. And we're getting immune to it. And I think that, you know, some of the lyrics that you have in this particular track, Feeding on Parasites, I mean, to me, it almost feels a little hopeful because it's someone saying, someone's going to stick around. And as long as someone survives, we have not lost, we live on. And that's just such a scarcity model of survival. But doesn't it just feel like what everyone's accustomed to anymore?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think you're right that we're getting numb and somewhat used to these narratives where at a certain point you just say, yeah, this is the way it is. I think a lot about Godzilla movies and how their reaction to having an atomic bomb dropped on your country. These movies about monsters, about a total lack of control that can be so such huge big budget entertainment, such great escapism that's really about what you're feeling every day.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
I definitely think about that for everything we're consuming right now, where we know what we're talking about and yet we're still escaping into it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on, we've got Lion on a Leash. This one, to me, this track kind of felt like a call to action for those with compassion. The fact that our society rewards strength and triumph and devalues emotions, logic, you know, even though we've seen so many things happen that go against the tenets of people with presumed connection to the faith, to church and to piety, we've seen people just not, it doesn't matter. They're by any means necessary, we're seeing these things. And I think that's really hard to put those two things together. And some of the lyrics on Lion on a Leash, why are you trying so hard to be gentle? How does it feel to be a lion on a leash? Your allies can't wait to bite you and you won't even show them your teeth. To me, it's just a matter of, you know, looking at that and being like, you're getting played. We're watching these systems get played and betray everything that they supposedly stood for.
This ties back again for me for the intergenerational resentment, where sometimes I watch a older statesman in Congress who at the start of their political career was really a firebrand who really pushed for serious change. And sometimes you stay in the same position for so long that you lose the ability to fight for something better because you don't think it can happen. The belief that expediency just, that doesn't exist, that gradual change is all there is. That can be very frustrating. So I was partly writing to encourage something a little more brutal, or at least something that matches the opposition. But then also, I think you can take that narrator and apply it to another situation as well. I think that narrator is fairly sinister, and they could easily be advising someone who's already quite brutal to be even more so.
Mm-hmm. And that same theme comes back up during the track Dinosaurs, which obviously is directly about acknowledging the failure of previous generations of obviously well-intentioned people on, you know, has to be many sides, who wanted to make the world a better place. And now we have inherited what exists now as a result. And not everything has been a failure. So many things in this world have gotten so much better. We might forget that because it's been a lot of gloom and doom. But yeah, to think back that you're looking and you're like, huh, didn't work. But you know what? Everything is where it is because of other things that have happened. So to me, that one was almost a little more positive as well.
Certainly. That one was, I think that narrator is the most self-aware on the record. There's a realization from that narrator that they will likely be an impediment to future generations in the same way that the elder statesmen they're railing against are an impediment to them.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a good chance that the pressures will break them as well to some extent.
And I love that this track goes right into the next one, which is an instrumental, a really short, fun instrumental, Time Will Eat Them. But to me, the actual content, the way it's composed, is almost a mockery, like kind of someone saying, the arc of history bends toward justice, and then cracking up.
Yeah.
Did I read that right?
I think you read that right. And there's almost something cathartic in that mockery.
Yeah.
In that laughter.
Yeah. And the final track, just moving through this, because I do believe this album reads like a book. The final track, Flowers Through the Stone, is another one of these ones that kind of wraps it up. Can you talk a little bit about that track? I absolutely love that one.
So I was thinking, again, about my grandmother, about my mom's mom, and just her perseverance, really, and her viewing on this, where we've been through this before, and we're going to go through this again. This won't be the last time either. We're not going to learn this lesson anytime soon.
Yeah, and
so I was thinking about that, but there's some hope in we've been through this before. We can come through it again. It means we've dealt with it before, at least.
And, you know, to me, this track, the message of this last track was really just like folk music at its most pure, you know, calling on generations, calling on people out there, you know, a call to stay the course with that bullhorn, the distant bullhorn in the storm. Stay focused on making things better. Stay around. Nothing's gotten better by giving up. To me, these were things that were obviously very much implied just through the name of it, you know, that things will end and you just got to put your mind and heart on the line for what's right and kind. And that's really just what, to me, folk music has always tried to do, an appeal to people, despite the awful conditions, to persevere and fight the power that is the power structures that are causing that pain.
I'm inspired that you take such optimism from it. I'm glad that that you can get that. I won't pretend I always felt it in putting this album together, but I'm glad that there are seeds to latch onto.
I really think there are, especially, like you said, when you zoom out and you think about what was going on in Europe in the 30s, obviously countless regimes in South America, all across every continent. And honestly, this is kind of a first for people in this country to really see this and see an actual threat to the power structures that we rely on. And you've put this album together, and I think it does wrap up the emotions of so many people that are experiencing it. And I think it will be a healing message for anybody that listens to it. And yeah, I totally get that the overarching things that are being said are dark and hard and terrifying, but we're looking at it. You know, to me, that is hopeful that we're looking at it and you're looking at it.
I agree with that, that looking away doesn't make any sense.
Well, I also like that there are many goat hooves that appear on this album, and I think goat hooves instrumentals is definitely going to be the future.
It's such a great texture in general. I'm a fan. I have a hard time using cymbals in my recordings because they just take away from strings and brass usually. You have less frequency real estate to play with, and so both this album and my last one, I've requested that my percussionist, Mike Meadows, not use cymbals at all, really. And his answer to that is goat hooves, usually.
Well,
or some sort of shakers.
Yeah, this brings me to the production. I would love to hear a little bit about the artists that you had on this album with you. And, you know, it just really comes together in such a beautiful way. It's so orchestral, almost to me, like almost a little even bigger. The swellings are bigger than I've seen on previous recordings. And this one, it fits the content so well.
Oh, thank you. Well, for this record, I drew really heavily from Austin orchestral pop band Mother Falcon. Diana Burgess sings harmony and plays cello on this record, as she has on my last two. She's, I think, easily the most important musical contributor to the album. And then I drafted some of her bandmates from Mother Falcon, Sterling Stephan on baritone saxophone, Roy Thomas on trumpet, and Daniel Fears on trombone, who I guess isn't a permanent member of Mother Falcon, but has played with them on many occasions. And then Evan Casper, who recorded and mixed the album, plays pedal steel, and he plays pedal steel with Mother Falcon as well. His contributions, I think, were just amazing. I was so thrilled. It can be a difficult instrument to fit in to these more delicate arrangements. I play a lot of banjo and banjolele on the album, and adding pedal steel next to a banjo can be tricky because they're both these kind of high tinny textures and they can get in each other's way. And I thought Evan was just fantastic in the way he navigated that space.
Well, I have to say, listening to the lyrics, it's such a dramatic thing to be taking in the words and the music that surrounds them. It's like when you don't notice something happening, you just notice the feeling. I think that's a success for me. I listen to a lot of music, and this is one where going through it, it felt like an immersive experience, which to me says that the music is so perfectly wrapped up in the tone and the message of the songs and the way that they progress, because you crafted it so carefully to be in these different chapters. The way it unfolds, to me, I thought was just spectacular. And the quality of musicians that you have working on it, it absolutely shows.
Oh, well, thanks so much.
Well, I think this is a complete and total triumph. I absolutely love this album. I can't wait to play it for our listeners. I know it's some heavy stuff. We've got a lot of divisions across the United States right now. And I think this perspective of each of these songs, I love that they're each standalones. But when listened to in succession, I highly recommend anybody who wants to really dig into this, get the full picture, get it all, and take it all in. Because it literally is like reading a book that one of the ones where when you close the cover, you want to start reading it again.
Oh, thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much, Curtis. This has been such a joy to catch up with you, and we cannot wait for live music and performance to come back together again, so we can all be together and hear you play some of these songs. I will bring some whiskey if indeed we can get you for a living room concert.
Oh, I can't wait to come back. Thank you so much for having me, Jenny.
All right. Thank you so much, Curtis. You take care.
You too.